of the things our gospel story is about today is about seeing the light of God as manifest, tangibly present and with us. Manifest and with us. It's a fitting scriptural conclusion to this last Sunday of Epiphany, the season of light, when we've been reflecting on Jesus as the light of the world, the manifest presence of God calling us to be the light in the world. And it's not about seeing the light of God that used to be manifest long ago in a particular incident unrelated to us, or it's not about seeing the light of God as a theoretical idea to believe in. It's about perceiving the light of God as manifest for us and for all, here and now and always, in the timeless, eternal nature of the Holy One's presence. And this is what I want to talk about today, perceiving the light of God as manifest and with us here in the context of our blessings and our difficulties and our gritty everyday moments and in the context of our troubled world. And with us in a way that matters, with us in a way that taken in will nourish us and strengthen us and surprise us and fill us with courage and love and renew us in the way that we experience life. This manifest presence of God is both a mystery, like what the heck are we talking about? Transfiguration and glowing lights and Moses. It's both a mystery and it's something we all have felt. It's something we are around all the time and may notice. We are free to notice one way or another. So I want to begin by grounding us in a few examples just from this past week. A few examples from the hundreds that we all could share of this manifest light and presence of God or sensing it. My first example was in the sweet presence of a little boy, a kindergartner at Roxborough. About five of us went over there to celebrate kindergarten's Valentine's Day party with them. It was part of a thank you from the school to St. Paul's for our volunteer tutors and our financial support of kids and families needing help. And in fact, if you are interested, out on the table, right just down here, there are some cards that the kids made and that the staff and teachers wrote thank you notes to us in. Very beautiful. So anyway, I was helping this little boy make a Valentine butterfly out of paper hearts and pom-poms with sparkles on them, and he was really into it. He was just a very smart, focused boy, and as he was working, he said to me, I've never seen a butterfly. And I said, really? Well, when the weather gets warm, you can look for them. They hang around colorful flowers. And he said, oh yeah, I've seen bees around flowers. Well, I'm gonna look for butterflies. And his eyes were so big and clear and shining with the reflection of light, and he was so excited by the idea that he knew and had the power to look for butterflies. It was such joy, and the manifest presence of God is as simple and profound as that. The light of a child's awe. And this is not a small thing, but a powerful thing, conveying, nourishing light. It did to my heart. It lifted me. My second example is from all places, the Super Bowl halftime show. I know there was controversy around that, and you know, we human beings are learning, hopefully, to live in the challenges and the expansive opportunities of being a family with many diverse opinions. But this was a moment that was absolutely light-filled, literally and metaphorically. There were fireworks exploding all around, and a message lit up the Jumbotron, which is the massive 360-degree screen, which the size of it is 70,000 square feet. So if you imagine a 10,000 square foot house times seven, this massive screen, which said on it, the only thing stronger than hate is love. And I looked this up, that screen is 80,000 pixels. So that's a lot of light, a lot of high clarity light, and over 135 million people around the world in 200 some countries were all looking at that message at the same moment. Love is more powerful than hate. And because that's true, we can feel love for people with whom we disagree profoundly. And life is currently desperately calling us to learn to do that. And in fact, faith traditions like this one are in a unique position to model that. Within congregations, within a tradition, among different denominations, and across faith traditions of all sorts around the world, to model that we can have a difference of opinion and a difference of ideas about how to do things, but we can still love each other and join in powerful solidarity about things that matter. Which brings me to my final example that happened last Tuesday on the steps of the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C., where thousands of people, including diverse religious leaders from all over Washington, D.C., gathered to greet and celebrate the Buddhist monks and the conclusion of their 110-day, 2,300-mile walk for peace. And Venerable Bhikkhu Pankhara, the monk who called for the walk, said, "Standing here in this holy place, it is overwhelming. Behind me now, you can see religious leaders together for the same mission, peace. This is a moment I will remember for the rest of my life, and I hope you will too." These are just a few examples of the moments of living grace that, taken in, will nourish us deeply. And these rather blatant moments offer us a taste to awaken and orient ourselves that this experience is available in every moment deep down, disclosing to us the inherent holiness of every moment, because God is present in every moment. The story of the Transfiguration in today's gospel echoes this theme in spades. It is meant to be blatant. It is meant to be big and clear and dramatic for us to see something important. The disciples are led up a mountain, a high mountain, by Jesus, and they see what they thought they knew transfigured into something far beyond the parameters of reality that they and that we normally expect or even feel comfortable with, a marvel revealed beyond the faculties of thought and perception in which we usually travel. And the blatancy of what is being revealed is further emphasized by many similarities which stitch the story to the Exodus story of Moses going up the mountain, a great cloud, fire, divine manifestation, light, all to affirm that Jesus Christ is a continuation and manifestation of God's presence and engagement that we see in the Old Testament. You may wonder, what was the origin of this transfiguration story? What was the actual experience that the disciples had? Well, we will never know, though many explanations have been offered and given by scholars and theologians over the centuries. I read a list recently that New Testament scholar Eugene Boring listed, examples of explanations from an objective reporting of an event that literally happened to various reports of a subjective vision, a dream, a disciple's misunderstanding of a nature event, a purely symbolic story created from the origins of ancient Hellenistic epiphanies, which frequently featured gods transforming to interact with mortals. Whatever powerful thing happened, we will never definitively know the disciples actually experience. But more importantly, we know we are passionately invited by Christ to experience God's manifest presence and light for ourselves. We can be fed in the aura and grace of Scripture or in the aura and grace of blatant experiences which we may have, or even by cultivating the receptivity to the many moments when God's manifest presence is extremely subtle. Most moments. It requires attentiveness and the honing of our inner senses by weeding out what is in our way. It is further cultivated by practicing love, stillness, prayer, humility, by nourishing ourselves at this table, by dedication and commitment. Our opening prayer for our service today called out to the God who revealed the glory of the Lord, echoing the words we heard in Exodus, the appearance of the glory of the Lord was like a fire on the mountain in the sight of the people. The root meaning of the Hebrew word for glory, kavod, was actually literally weightiness, much weight. It signifies significant substance or substantial presence as opposed to an abstraction. It implies a tangible, sometimes overwhelming reality. In Scripture, it is often referring to God's manifest presence. The glory of God is a substantial, significant presence. This glory can be seen or unseen, but most often it is sensed. The word kavod also connotes the state of great abundance, a large, full supply. So as we conclude this season of Epiphany, may we remember that we are by design torchbearers who through consciousness and surrender and free will and the light of Christ can let the light in and radiate it, which the world desperately needs. So I'd like to conclude with a proclamation from the prophet Isaiah. Arise, shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord has risen upon you. For darkness shall cover the earth, and thick darkness the peoples, but the Lord will arise upon you, and the Lord's glory will appear over you. May we take in the beauty and brightness of the dawn.